Hello, everyone. Welcome back once again to the Backlog Review Game Club. Oh, what's that? Who's with me? It's like a specter has arisen and is in the room with me. I feel a presence. Who could it be?
I'm actually dead.
Ah!
Or maybe I'm alive. Continue listening to find out.
Oh, you damn meddling kids. We would have got away with it, too.
Resident damn meddling kid.
Welcome back, everyone. As you can tell, the energy is a bit different because we're finally in the same room again after 14 months.
Coexisting once again.
That's
and
right.
By coexisting, I mean I'm here for a little bit. And then I'll go back to my place.
Right. And that we finally are able to see people again because we're vaccinated and things are resembling some kind of normal again. So yay!
Yay!
So anyway, I am Chris. It's good to talk to you again. And it's good to have with me, finally, once again in the same room, Paul.
Hey, everyone. It's
yay.
Great to be here. I'm happy that I can see your face, not through a video screen.
Yeah, and I'm glad that I don't have to point us to that timing website, then have to do all the clapping and all that fun stuff.
Yes. Those days are in the past.
Online hopefully. Production is a pain in the ass. I'm don't get me wrong. Thankful we could do it, but glad we don't have to do it.
Yep. No. Yeah, for sure.
So we're back, and I know last month we kind of just sort of were all loosey-goosey and just like, hey, we'll figure it out. We got so many things to do. We know what we're doing now, and you know why we're here, because it's in the episode title. But as you can figure out, we just got to keep going on this Kojima kick that we're on, and we got to know what happens to our good buddy Solid Snake.
It's true.
And we're going to find the origins of the Solid series, I guess. The original of the Solids.
Yeah. The most solid.
It's the most.
They started to get a little jello like as time went on, but super solid on the first one.
Sorry, this first. Oh, we'll get to that.
Sort of oobleck by three.
Mm-hmm.
Just water by five.
Yeah, no, we are here to talk about Metal Gear Solid for the PlayStation 1.
Ooh.
We go back to 1998. It was a mysterious time. A gray box was on people's TV stands. People didn't know what to do. We put discs in it. Sometimes you listen to music on it. Turns out it was the Sony PlayStation.
Ooh.
This episode got spookier than we anticipated.
Very spooky. Yeah, we're already...
We're just teasing our eventual Resident Evil run.
Is he alive? Is he dead? What's this gray box? Mysteries abound.
Before we get too deep into the episode, I just want to... I think of I'm going to bring up this memory / thought. I often think about my original PlayStation sometimes, and that I miss it because I gave it away to my old church youth group.
Aww.
And now I know it's sitting somewhere, probably in a closet, if not completely sold, because that church no longer exists, and yeah. I no longer go to it. But I was just like, oh man, I had like the original Tony Hawk and everything. Meh.
I mean, if it makes you feel any better, one of my biggest regrets in life is selling my Super Nintendo to GameStop.
Yeah,
of all places.
Yeah,
not even like a church.
Yeah, you like donation or anything.
Not even a donation. It was just straight up, I needed money.
Just commerce.
I needed money. I was a dumb kid.
Oh, man.
I got all of $8 for it. Yeah.
Oh,
it was terrible.
God.
Yep. Just rubbing salt in the wound.
Oh,
it was
that
bad.
Hurts. Because yep. I think about that from time to time, and I've almost bought a Super Nintendo a couple of times within the last 3 or 4 years, more than that, probably like 7 or 8 years, I've thought about it. And they haven't been that expensive, but it's definitely more than $8.
Yeah, that's the bummer.
I can tell you exactly the games I had for my Super Nintendo. All right, we're going to go into Grandpa Games Corner here for a second, and I don't mind.
Grandpa Games!
our
new segment.
Yeah, really, I like to call myself Cranky Old Gamer Grandpa. So yeah, we'll go with that. But anyway, cranky old gamer grandpa corner. I'm gonna work on that. Don't worry. We'll have a stinger and everything.
Cranky old gamer grandpa.
It's hard. Cranky old gamer grandpa corner. It's really
Let me
hard.
try again. Crank.
Oh no, we gotta go for a third take.
Cranky old gamer grandpa corner.
There we go. Oh, that's the keeper.
That's
So my Super Nintendo, I can remember I only ever had like four or five games for it. I didn't own a lot. That's when we rented everything. Back when rental stores were still a thing.
Yeah. Rest in peace.
Oh my god. Mario Paint with the mouse pad.
Ooh.
That old ball mouse they had to take out and clean every once in a while. Yep. So I had that because I would always play that. I'd always mess around with the music editor and then the fly swatting minigame, which I miss quite a bit.
Good stuff.
So Mario Paint, we had Super Mario World because of course you did. That came with this. I think that came with the system. Had Bugs Bunny in. Oh, I used to remember the full title. It's like, I think it's called like Bugs Bunny in Rabbit Season.
Okay.
And it was just you running away from Elmer Fudd.
Yeah.
It was dog shit.
Yep.
The game felt like garbage, but I played it a lot.
Yeah.
Hated that game. We had what's the casino? It was a casino.
Caesar's Palace.
Yes, thank you. Caesar's Palace.
Yep. Or maybe that was on the original Nintendo we had. But anyway, either. Yeah.
My dad bought it.
Yep.
Because he was like, oh. And you, like, I remember you could like walk around the casino and then go to the thing you wanted to play.
Yep.
So that's how I learned how Keno worked.
Yeah.
Nothing like teaching an 8-year-old what Keno is.
Yep. All the important parts of life.
Right. Yep. To this day, that's how I learned how the roulette table. I don't know why I put such a weird emphasis on that. So
the roulette.
The roulette table. No, roulette table. That's how I learned how to bet on that, which was always just pick one of the colors.
just hope for the best.
Don't pick the numbers. You'll never win. Just pick one of the two and just get a little bit of money.
There you go.
But there you go. That was my Super Nintendo. We had two controllers for it because me and my sister were supposed to share it. My sister did not play it. Although when I got my PlayStation, we moved it into her room, and then sometimes I would just go into her room and play the Super Nintendo.
Well, hey, what else?
Yeah, we sold it at a yard sale. That's what kills me.
It's yeah, like, oh, that's rough.
Could have kept that, and then I found out years later when I never got rid of all my PS2 games, except my parents did. And so I remember a couple years back when I got my another PlayStation 2. I was like, hey, do you still have all those like games and stuff? Because I was really hoping they kept... I had this Logitech wireless controller, which is so hard to find now. On eBay, it goes for like $80 alone. And I promise we're going to talk about Metal Gear Solid. But this is important.
This is very important.
This thing was like... It was the freaking Cadillac of game controllers for the PS2.
So, now that we're... Oh. Yeah, the PS2. Never mind.
Yeah. And anyway, yeah, I found out that she got rid of it along with all of... I had like at least 15 PS2 games, and she got rid of the majority of them, including Metal Gear Solid 3 Subsistence.
Rest in peace, last episode.
Anything you want to contribute to Cranky Old Gamer Grandpa Corner?
Yeah, we had like a shoebox full of Super Nintendo games.
Mm-hmm.
Ours actually came with Super Mario Kart, but we had, as like time went on, and because I skipped the 64 generation, didn't have one of those, went to the GameCube. But during that time, you know, the games, you know, the people, they weren't renting out Super Nintendo games anymore. They were just selling them in bargain bins, so we could get like a handful for like $10. So we ended up just having a bunch.
But that was the time to do it.
Yep.
I wish I'd like thought to do that back then, because I could have easily easily tripled the collection of five.
Yeah.
But still,
not too many.
Like, I could have at least gotten the ones like I used to rent all the time. You know.
Also, that is just a strange thing to say, I guess, anymore. A shoebox full of of cartridges.
Yeah.
But
man, I just thought about Mario is Missing. And I could do a that whole was episode great. About Mario's Missing.
That was a great game.
The only good edutainment game ever made.
Yep.
And I put good in quotes.
Well, it was a Carmen Sandiego of Mario.
You got to ride Yoshi around in San Francisco.
Yeah, great. It was great.
Yeah. That might make the list.
I would play that again.
I know. I need to find a way to play Mario is Missing. And then we need to talk about that.
That'd be great.
That'll be a whole episode of Cranky Old Gamer Grandpa.
That is my corner.
Yeah.
I live in that corner most of the time.
We need to do more Super Nintendo stuff. But anyway.
We do.
Back to what we're supposed to talk about. That's Metal Gear Solid, David.
Oh, yeah, right.
We need to talk about war and clones.
Gears.
Otaku conventions. We're going to get into that because I'm still upset about it.
Not gaseous things. Not liquid things, not
ocelots,
non-Newtonian fluids,
not revolving ocelots,
solids, straight solids.
Oh God! All right, let's get into it.
It's been a long time, Snake.
I should have known you were behind this, Colonel.
That's no way to greet an old war buddy, Snake.
What do you want from me?
I just invited you here so we could have a talk.
Invited? That's what you call sending armed soldiers after me?
Sorry if they were a little rough with you. But we've got a serious situation here. Only you can get us out of it.
I'm retired from Foxhound. You're not my commander anymore, and I don't have to take orders from you or anyone else.
You will take these orders. I know it.
Metal Gear Solid was released for the PlayStation 1 originally September 3rd, 1998. Oh, what a year.
What a year.
I was a precocious child then.
Same. What a time to be alive.
Yep. How old was I then? Probably, I was nine when this came out.
Yep.
Did not play it then. Obviously, took me until I was well into my 30s to play this game. Developed, released by Konami. This was before Kojima Productions existed inside of Konami. So it was just Hideo Kojima just happened to be a regular old Konami employee. And then these games basically earned him his own team. But pretty much the people that made this game would go on to make all the rest of them up until 5. And we don't even talk about Metal Gear Survive. Although we should as an offshoot one. The gameplay, real quick. I mean, we're going to try to structure this. Once again, this is not going to be a 3-hour deep dive.
Yeah, no.
We can't keep doing that.
I think that's only one. We can only do that once. That's
right.
Not
and two was the one to do it in.
Yeah.
Two is the strangest of them all. It's
just ridiculous.
And also the best part about doing one after two is that we basically told the story of one.
Yeah.
We're just going to change some names and some events around.
Yep.
But some things to note about this game, it was the first 3D game in the series. So before this, it was just Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2 : Solid Snake, which were on the MGX. And then I think originally later they got put on the NES, but those aren't the good versions.
Right.
There is no first-person targeting with the weapons in this game. There's a first-person camera you can have. But unlike the games in the rest of the series where you would go to first-person mode and then you could bring your gun up to point and shoot, this one you can only use first-person mode to look around a little bit, and it's like super unhelpful. So all the shooting is done with automatic targeting in the fixed camera mode. So, like, when you aim up, as long as you're kind of close to an enemy, it'll put it'll target in on them. But then if you have to move around, God help you. Because it's awful. And we should point out, too, that... So this was a weird way we played this one together. I'll put the link in the show notes. There is a YouTube playlist of the Twitch streams that we did where I played it on my PS2 with backwards compatibility for PS1. So we played it there, and then I streamed it, and Paul joined me for the stream. So Paul was watching the gameplay while I was the one playing it. Let me just say, Paul had the better seat in the house for all this, because playing this game really sucks.
Yeah, I was not envious.
So there is like CQC here, but it's barely much of anything. It's just here's the punch and kick button and hope. And then occasionally you can, if you do it right, you can put them in a headlock from behind and either snap their neck or just like choke them out unconscious. Right. That's like the only way to be pacifist in this game too, is not full on breaking their necks, but just kind of like forcing them to pass out in a choke. There's no tranquilizer gun in the whole game. I did look this up to confirm it later. They never added a tranquilizer gun until the second game in the series. So it just, you just end up killing waves and waves of faceless enemies, which I guess does work for the story they tell later on. But we'll kind of merge that in. Tranquilizers actually did get added in, though, when they re-released this game as Twin Snakes on the GameCube. And I shouldn't say it's a full re-release, because Twin Snakes was made by a different team that kind of redid sort of a remake of one on the GameCube. But then Kojima was only... like, I don't think he directed it. I think he was just consulting on it. So there's like some differences in Twin Snakes compared to this version. So people get weird about canon. I just wanted to bring that up. I do know they're different. The story of MGS2 kind of makes more sense now. As someone who only, like, MGS2 was my first game in the series, which is not how you're supposed to do it.
It was also mine.
Yep. That's right, I forced you down my path on this one.
Hey, that's okay.
Now knowing, like, MGS1, like, all the events of 2 are just everything that happened in 1 with new characters and then taken to, like, 11.
Yeah.
You know, I have a note here about the trap floors. So many fucking trap floors. Who? Paul knows because he watched me do this about four times a stream.
Yep.
Thank goodness that I found those thermal goggles. Without the thermal goggles, I would have never learned that there were trap floors in a lot of rooms.
Yeah.
Except for that first time I ran into a room, waited too long, and then just fell through for no reason. And it was like right after a boss fight too.
Yep.
I'm just like, all right, Kojima, I see what we're in for here.
Yeah.
All right, onward we go.
What just happened?
I hate this game.
Did you just talk to
that? Yeah, it was another stupid trap doors.
Oh.
Oh my god, that's so frustrating. And then the checkpointing of this game feels really weird at times. Sometimes you die and you'll be a room away. Other times you'll die and you'll have to like redo 3 rooms to get to back where you are. Like, what fight was it that you and I had? I had to skip the video like 4 times because I kept, was it the Rex fight at the end? Or was it the one before that? The Raven fight.
The Raven fight was, you did that one a lot.
Yeah,
you did that one a lot. The Rex fight too.
That Rex fight, oh my god,
it was rough.
Yeah, but there'll be more to say about that Rex
fight. Yeah, but yeah, either way, there were. I would say there was probably more than one occasion where,
yeah,
just having to skip through that.
It's frustrating too because like it's. There's so much. It's Kojima. There's so much dialogue.
Yeah, there is.
Like, there was a joke I did later on in the streams where I would just, whenever we would hit these like 20 minute chunks of just dialogue, I just started putting a title up that just said story time. And I would just put the controller down and then that would be the end of it.
There was the one, I guess, when you were in the prison.
Oh yeah,
you were being tortured. That was That was probably the most arduous.
Yeah.
Let's
do a brief rundown of the story.
Yeah, sounds good.
So, and we'll try to touch on these bits in between. Solid Snake is pulled out of retirement at the request of one Roy Campbell. You may have heard that name
before. Boy.
Yep.
Your boy Roy.
We Roy's boys here.
We Roy's boys here.
Oh, good old Roy. He brings Solid Snake out of retirement, and he's sent into a secret nuclear facility codenamed Shadow Moses in Alaska.
Ooh, intrigue.
Ooh. There's a terrorist splinter cell.
But not...
A foxhound.
But not Splinter Cell.
Yeah, this is not that Splinter Cell. This other one. Yep, named Foxhound. And they've kidnapped the DARPA chief, Donald Anderson, and they've kidnapped the president of Arms Tech, Kenneth Baker. That led to one or more DARPA and Greg jokes on stream.
We did make a lot of DARPA and Greg jokes.
That I was extremely proud of, which is really stupid.
No, but they were good. They were apt.
It's stupid how much I thought about it after the stream. It's stupid that after I said it, I didn't just let it go. I thought about it again later. I thought, it was funny.
You were proud of yourself.
It was lockdown. Or it was months in the pandemic at that point. Anything was making me laugh. So this group, the Splinter Cell, is led by Liquid Snake with Revolver Ocelot.
Ooh.
Names that we've heard before.
Liquid and Revolver.
This is back. He's now a full-grown man, Ocelot, in this one. Not young, precocious, kitty-meowing Ocelot. Oh, they forget. Every time now.
The heck is.
Oh, I love that part so much. Anyway, so Liquid.
Maybe it should be more like that, like Shaft. You know, like, he's shooting fast and aiming straight.
That, you know, so what?
You could tell by his manly gait. Ocelot!
So good. I think we need to make an Extra Life donation.
We need a donation
goal this year where you have to write the full Ocelot song in the style of the Shaft.
A Shaft.
Yeah. Oh, I want that so bad now.
I would do it.
The group is looking to hijack Metal Gear Rex, which, as I've put down in my notes, is a robotic lizard. I like that I put, now I'm going to read this exactly, just to let you know how great of a writer I am. A robotic lizard looking robot. No shit, Chris.
Look, it was just a robot. It was a sandwich. You know, the pieces of bread were the word robot.
I don't proofread my notes. It's a lizard looking robot capable of nuclear strikes.
Been there.
Yeah. So the members of the group, other than Liquid and Ocelot, are Vulcan Raven, Psycho Mantis, and Sniper Wolf. The first of the group that you actually like really run into. I don't want to jump straight to the boss fights. I have the boss fights listed out as kind of a dot along the way to try to remember. So you get there and like you're doing your basic. It's Metal Gear Solid stealth gameplay. This is the game that defined that gameplay for the whole series. So you're trying to avoid the radar cones. You can take enemies out, although in this one, it's way harder. Like, there's no trank gun, and there's no suppressor, or if there is, it's very minimal.
Right.
So you can't just, like, go headshotting everybody all the time. So you're really, like, having to just... like run and hope for the best. Like I barely took anybody out unless things went bad.
Right.
And they went bad a lot.
Yeah, that's the ticker there.
Yeah, I really wanted a death counter when we did those streams because it was bad some nights. There were some nights where I wanted to quit after 20 minutes and just be like, screw it. Like that one week where the PlayStation was acting up and I got to play Metal Gear Solid 5, it was such a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
This is what it's like when a game plays good. So you sneak around trying to get to the DARPA chief and Kenneth Baker, but the first of the group that you run into is Revolver Ocelot. Mm-hmm. That's one of your first boss fights. That one, there's not much to... That was pretty easy. That was like a one and done that we did. Not too much to speak of. It's really just more of a taste of what's to come. I don't think there's like any weird tricks. You know how Kojima likes his.
Do you play Do you fight Revolver Ocelot at the beginning of like each game? You do in three. You definitely do in three.
Yeah, that's a good question. You don't in two. You don't. But yeah, I'm trying to think of who the well you run into him.
Yeah,
but you don't fight him directly.
Yeah,
because I'm trying to think. Cause you're on that tanker, and you see him later. But that's when he's that's when he's Ocelot and Snake.
Yeah, when he's grafted the arm on.
Yeah, when he's liquid in Ocelot. Although then four changes that. I don't want to get into four yet. I'm still getting through four.
We are not there.
So yeah, the Ocelot fight's pretty one and done. You don't actually take him out. You just sort of like, I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
So you make your way through the facility deeper. Really, it's just you're going through different rooms trying to find stuff. The next fight that you encounter is outside. And it's Vulcan Raven. And this is the tank fight.
Yeah.
So the things I remember about the tank fight, this was another one where the Therm G's came in handy here, because
Therm G for you laymen out there,
yeah, we
thermal goggles,
yeah, we affectionately called them Therm G's because that's what they're listed as on the UI in the game.
Inventory, yeah,
yeah, like yeah, they're the thermal goggles, but they will always be Therm G's from now on.
Yep.
So Therm G's were on, and that's when you realize that there's a bunch of, like, claymore mines hidden around the outside. So without those on, you would just randomly get blown up, which I would still do every once in a while, and I had to backtrack through there.
Yeah.
They kept them in.
Yep. Unnecessarily.
This one, I remember, I died the first time we did it because I had no idea how to take him on. Because it was just like, oh, he just fires missiles at you, and he's in a freaking tank.
Yep.
Of course, you have nothing. and that's when I realized that there was like a sensor or something on the... You threw chaff grenades because the tank was auto-targeting you. So if you threw chaff, the tank couldn't get you, and then you could go like chuck grenades at the tank.
Which is nice foreshadowing for the final.
Yeah. Didn't even think of that. Yeah,
final fight, anyway.
Man, I don't think I realized how much chaff grenades really factored in.
In this one, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember using them as much in any of the other games.
No. Two, I only ever used them for like running around or getting out of trouble.
Yeah.
But I never used them as much. Like, one, like, chaff grenades were essential.
Yeah.
Which is weird. So, yeah, that's another one where you, like, blow up the tank, but you don't kill him.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'll get you later.
Yeah. Somehow they survive these explosions and whatnot.
Like every time. So I think after the tank is when you make your way to where the DARPA chief is.
Mm-hmm.
And this scene in Metal Gear 2 is very similar to when Raiden finds the president with his pacemaker. In this game, Snake just finds the DARPA chief in his prison cell.
Right.
Way easier to find.
Yep.
As a result. But this is also when you meet Meryl for the first time.
Don't move! So you killed the chief, you bastard! Liquid? No, you're not. Don't move!
Is this the first time you ever pointed a gun at a person? Your hands are shaking. Can you shoot me, rookie?
Careful, I'm no rookie.
Liar. That nervous glance, that scared look in your eyes, they're rookie's eyes if I ever saw them. You've never shot a person, am I right?
You talk too much.
You haven't even taken the safety off, rookie.
I told you I'm no rookie!
You're not one of them, are you?
Open that door. You've got a car, don't you?
Why?
So we can get the hell out of here!
Looks like we'll be a little delayed.
What are you doing? Don't think! Shoot!
Meryl, who plays a big role in this game, is... it's hard to say if it's the love interest. It kind of plays like that, like she's like the lead, and like Snake and her flirt way too much.
Yep.
This is actually a good time to talk about.
After just meeting.
Yeah.
Just strange.
This is a good time where I don't want to give it a corner, but we'll call this section Inappropriate Snake Passes at Women, which is the majority of the women in this game, except for one.
Inappropriate Snake Passes at Women.
Yeah. He.
That's the that's the theme for this
that's
segment.
A good. That's Thank a good you. Theme.
Thank you.
He so on the radio, you know, you always give your cast a crew on the radio. So you have Campbell, you have Naomi, who he immediately flirts with. Like first 5 minutes, there's already a strip search joke.
It's literally, I think it's the first sentence, not the strip search joke, but like within his first statement.
Yeah, it's like, oh, there's a lady. I bet she wants to see me naked.
Yeah,
so
that is my name. Just kidding.
Remember, except for your binoculars, you're naked. You need to arm yourself with whatever weapons you can find.
I remember. First, I'm strip searched by Dr. Naomi here, and then all my weapons are taken away. Imagine yourself put in that position.
Well, if you make it back in one piece, maybe I'll let you do a strip search on me.
I'll hold you to that, Doctor.
So yeah, Naomi, Mei Ling, he doesn't really have to. Mei Ling has a problematic Asian American accent.
Yes.
And I know this is, they know it's bad because they fix it in four.
Oh, really?
Because she's not, she's of Chinese descent, but she was born in America.
Yeah.
So she shouldn't necessarily have that like broken English thing that
right.
to do. And in four, she does not. She just, she gave her, so yeah, that was problematic.
Yeah, probably a good thing.
So yeah, Mei Ling is just sort of like, you know, they just have the weird back and forth where she gives like, here's stories and anecdotes that like Rose did in two, but they don't mean anything to the gameplay.
Right.
Meryl is probably the one that gets it the worst, but Meryl also has this weird like, oh, you're the protagonist. Oh, I want to sleep with you.
Yeah.
It's just,
it's very forced. Like it's very, it's just like, oh, there's no run up to this. There's no development. They're just immediately sexually charged. This relationship is immediately
the planet rests on them getting this nuclear weapon back from terrorists, and yet they still feel the need to take like 5 minutes to be like, yeah, you know, I'd probably sleep with you, right?
yeah
I'd probably do that too. It's just, it felt like such like action movie bullshit.
Yeah,
that
really
was just
did.
You know, it was think that's it. The only one he really doesn't make a pass at is Sniper Wolf, and Sniper Wolf is arguably the most sexually charged woman in the game.
I would say so.
Which says a lot because she is also confident.
Yeah.
And yet another female character, or yet another character in this game that wants to die.
Yeah,
there's a couple of those in this one.
It's really true. Like, what have they all gone through? You know, like what's.
Okay, well, I'll jump ahead a little. No, I'll talk about it now because I don't really have a place for it, but I did read, because I forgot about this. I have this book right here.
Ooh.
It's Boss Fight Books has a lot of books about various video games. They have good writers and stuff to write about it. So they did, one of their earliest books was on Metal Gear Solid, and it has Ashley Birch and Anthony Birch. Ashley Birch will recognize because she's done a ton of voiceover. I guess they had a YouTube channel. I knew nothing about their YouTube channel. It was called like, Hey Ash, what you playing? It was kind of fun. I watched some. It was funny.
Sounds good. Yeah.
It was pretty good. It was good for early YouTube, and like they were pretty good with their stuff. Anthony Birch wrote, he was the lead writer of Borderlands 2. So take that for what you're worth. What it's worth.
That, hey, I liked Borderlands 2.
I have a contentious point with Borderlands because I cannot remember anything about the story. As far as I'm concerned, those games are schluters, and that's it.
Yeah, I guess not the story, but the quips. I was there for the quips.
Mm. I feel like it got too quippy, but that's another game we can probably talk about.
I think 2 was a good balance of it. 3, no.
3, no, but...
But
I can assure you, at least for a while, we are not touching Borderlands 3.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fine.
Anyway, my point of bringing
the
book
up, so
I should actually talk about why
Cycle back to
brought the book up. They bring up, you know, the way that Sniper Wolf is presented, and I think they have a very good conversation back and forth about how Sniper Wolf has this implied power dynamic over Snake, and Snake is very childlike in his relationship with women because A, he was a child soldier. So there's a lot of that like arrested development thing in terms of how his views of women have probably been instilled in him. But whenever he's up against a woman that is confident in herself and like has some power, he doesn't really know what to do. And like, you can kind of gather that, like, that's one like interpretation of this relationship that they have.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's also interesting too, to have a good conversation too about how Otacon has like this weird love of Sniper Wolf. And while it kind of seems unreciprocated, it kind of reveals that maybe Sniper Wolf has this softer side. I can't do the conversation justice. They do a whole chapter on it. I do recommend checking it out in the book. It's a pretty good read. So yeah, wanted to bring that up. But the important bit about Sniper Wolf's story that was revealed in her, like, I'm dying, so here's all of my character development, is that her parents were killed. Yeah. that's a Kojima thing.
Yeah.
I'm dying, so now you get to realize why I'm important.
Yeah.
Her parents were killed by the Iraqi government, and then she was forced into fighting at a young age as a result of that. And I can't remember if she was blackmailed into it or what, but now the whole reason she's with Foxhound is she's trying to get revenge on the people that killed her parents. And then it just went south because Liquid's like, but what if we get this nuke? And she's like, all right, whatever. That's not what I'm here for, but yeah. I'll go along for the ride to get my revenge.
Right.
So yeah, they just wait till she's dying to bring that up.
Yeah.
So anyway, after you meet Meryl, she kind of like tags along off and on throughout the mission. She'll be there to provide backup. Sometimes she's fighting with you. Other times she's going out ahead to go look for things. One of my favorite fourth wall breaking moments, and there are plenty in this game, is the first time that Campbell tells you Meryl's out there and you have to contact her. And they're like, oh yeah, you should, there's probably something lying around that has her frequency on it. I'm like, oh, okay. And then, like, I remember I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, oh, is there something in the game on the wall somewhere that has it? And then you radio him again, and he's like, check the back of the CD case. I think it's on there, right? And I was like, oh, right. Yeah, sure enough, you look, one of the screenshots on the back of the Metal Gear Solid case is Meryl's frequency. And the thing I love about it, too, is that whenever they did the PlayStation Classic re-release, that little, like, mini thing they did, they put Metal Gear Solid on it. And the one they put screenshots of every game on the back of the box. And the Metal Gear Solid one is the one of Meryl.
So that's
amazing. They thought far enough ahead to keep that in there. I was like, that's really good.
The continuity.
So, yeah, she's with you on and off. They do... they really do Meryl dirty in this one. She comes back later in the series, and I feel like they give her a better story.
That's good.
Later on. But yeah, it's sad because I do like her. Like, I like her character in there, and I think she was a lot better later on than what they did to her in this one, because she was just like, I'm the lady that sometimes need help, but I'm also a soldier.
Yeah.
But,
well, yeah, especially in this one, they sort of frame her as a not ignorant person, but just somebody who doesn't know anything about being a soldier.
Right, and like, she was the one that snuck in there anyways and was already undercover.
She was undercover, she was like dressed up as, you know, so she obviously stole some sort of uniform from some guard and all of that kind of stuff.
Do we need to mention the butt swaying thing?
I really don't want to.
Which is real quick to add to the creepy snake corner.
Yeah, sorry.
The inappropriate snake.
Bring back, yeah. Yeah, inappropriate snake. I've already forgotten what we gave that segment.
Yep, there's a whole thing where, like, she's dressed up as one of the guards, and you have to go into this room with, like, six guards, and you have to, because this is where, after you contact her, you say, I'll meet you here. And they keep telling you, like, you need to figure out a way to differentiate Meryl from the rest of them. I happened to do it by mistake. I didn't do it the way they want you to do it. I just remember, like, I watched her walking, like, I watched the pattern that she went, and she always went into the one bathroom, and none of the guards did that, so right. I knew that was her. what they want you to do, because they foreshadow it the first time you see her run away before you know who she is that they zoom in on her butt and they're like, oh, look, she sways her hips further left to the left and right further than the men do. So gross.
Yep.
I just happen to be like, oh, wait, she goes on a different route than the rest of them. Yeah. That's how I know it's her.
Yep, and exactly. But yeah, they just paint her in this, you know, she obviously doesn't know what she's doing, light, but yeah, like you said, I mean, she infiltrated the base,
right,
and all of that stuff already. She's been doing. She knows what she's doing.
This is not her first mission either, right? So Meryl deserves more.
Yeah.
Back to like the progression of the story. You run into a ninja shows up at one point shortly after you run into Meryl. This is Gray Fox, whose name is Frank Yeager. Frank Yeager has history with Solid Snake.
That he does.
He was a friend and fellow soldier during the Outer Heaven Uprising, which was the events of Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2. So Frank Yeager was in both of those games. And so has history. But now he shows up here. He's got this cybernetic suit. And he is also, once again, yearning for death.
Yep.
He's the other character in this game that needs to die but can't and is asking for the sweet release of death. And Snake, will you be the one to kill me? Which is such a... I am really surprised how many times this has come up in the series.
I agree. It's such a strange thing. Yeah. I don't know.
Like, starting on 2, I didn't think much of it with... I can't remember her name.
Yeah, the lucky person.
Yes. I can't remember it. And, like, I thought the way they did it with her was pretty good. But I did not realize that it had already done it 2 other times.
Right.
In the first game.
Yep.
With Gray Fox and then Sniper Wolf. So, yeah, it's this fight is another one where you just kind of... I think it's a punch and kick fight.
Yes.
They want you to punch and kick. I don't think I could use my gun the whole time.
Yeah, because I think he blocked the bullets with his sword.
Right, yeah. And then he would also do the invisibility thing.
Yep.
So that was a pretty good one. I actually enjoyed this.
Yeah,
this
that was fight a good, for the that was a good part. Fight.
Once again, Therm G's.
Therm G's
always spotted him, so you could run right to where he was. Exactly. And punch kick.
One other piece of, I guess, story, just lore,
mm-hmm.
is that Frank Yeager was saved by Big Boss.
Yes, that's important.
He was, and given to the CIA, right? Or some. He was given to somebody in Mozambique or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like as I a child, because so. His. Village burned down or something like that, but he was for protection.
Him and Snake grew up together too, if I remember right.
I think he's like a little older than Snake, but yeah, it's similar.
Well, they were like basically trained together, right. Like that, I think is what it was.
But he was used as the, was it Project Null or something like, or maybe he was Null
mm-hmm.
in the early games. I don't know. Either way, he was, he ended up, instead of just being protected and shielded as a refugee, he was experimented on essentially and became a super soldier.
Right. That's why he's basically kind of cyber. Is he like cybernetic in this one because of it?
I don't know.
But they did do experiments on him.
Yeah.
Which is also why he's asking for death, because he's now at the point where he's
had a rough life.
Yeah. He's in pain constantly.
Frank. Yeah.
If I remember correctly. And he just can't be defeated. Right. He's just like, I'm too good. Please kill me.
You know, like people do.
You know, it's just straight up, you know, standard Metal Gear fare at this point. So, like, the storyline pretty much after the DARPA chief has, I should have mentioned this, much like in 2, he has a heart attack or some kind of heart episode and dies. So he's the one that kind of tells you about Metal Gear's existence and why they're there. Like, hey, they're trying to get the nuke. So you're just trying then to go find Liquid and Ocelot and prevent them from getting the nuke. That becomes your main focus.
Right.
So after Gray Fox, you and Meryl kind of continue on trying to find Liquid Snake. You run into Psycho Mantis. Which the Psycho Mantis section is probably the most well-known section of the game for people that haven't played it. Like, it's the most discussed because it says most discussed, the most talked about.
Yeah.
I would say it's disgusting.
Not disgust as in.
Yeah. It's the most well known, it's the most talked about scene in the games, because this was the one where he would read your memory card, or he would make the controller shake, which is less impressive in 2021.
Yeah.
But some of the things I didn't know that happened in this is I didn't know he possesses Meryl, and once again gets creepy with Meryl.
Yep.
Also, that was another thing that they brought up in the book about whenever Meryl becomes like possessed and is like coming on to Snake in person, he gets weirded out by that, because here's someone that is direct and knows what they want, and he's like, oh, I don't know what to do
right that. Yeah, right.
But yeah, it's an interesting fight. I completely forgot about the switching the controller port thing, so that is the big gimmick here. There's a lot of fake outs. Like, one of the things that happens immediately in the fight is that you get this fake like video switch thing, and it says, like, instead of saying video, it says Hideo.
Oh, just switch one letter.
Subtle.
Yep.
So yeah, they do like these fake outs and visual fake outs and whatnot. Anytime you try to attack him without changing the controller port, so if you just leave things as they were, he is able to just block every move. You can't get a hit in on him. So they literally tell you, I think if you radio after like two or three times, hey, try switching the controller port, like put it in player two, and then he can't read your mind, and then you can like attack him pretty easily. So
pretty clever.
Yeah, that was clever. I liked that aspect of it. Apparently too, if you have like other Konami game saves, like if you have a Castlevania save, he'll make other comments about that, like, oh, you didn't get this far in the castle, huh? Which I was sad that I didn't have that, but I'm also not that big of a Castlevania person.
Yeah, so there you go.
So yeah, Psycho Mantis fight, that one was fun. You take him out, make it past him, you're making your way out of the one facility. There's like two facilities. After you make it out of there, you make your way on to the first fight with Sniper Wolf. This was a pain only because, it starts out by you walk into like this kind of
long hallway.
Well, yeah, it's a long hallway, blocked off. She's on the far end of it, and she takes out Meryl. Or, like, she wounds Meryl. She doesn't fully kill her, but she can at any moment.
Yeah.
So you have to fight, and this is where you can actually either save Meryl or let her die. Problem was, when I played it, is I didn't have the sniper rifle, which apparently is how it's supposed to happen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, you can find the sniper rifle earlier on, but they kind of, from what I read, it's not unintended for you to get to that fight and then have to backtrack.
Oh.
So I was freaking out because I thought it was like a time delay thing.
Right.
I gotta get back so she doesn't die. But I had to backtrack all the way back to where before the tank.
Yep.
And that was like, go out of facility, go across the snowfield, get blown up again because I forgot. Go back into the other building, get the sniper rifle from the basement, come all the way back up, go across the field again, put on the therm G's this time. Go back into the other building, get my way through.
Still get blown up.
Yeah, it was insane. It was like 20 minutes of backtracking just to get that sniper rifle. And then when we got back, Meryl's gone. And I was like, oh God, she died.
Yeah.
But no. So anyway, you just have a sniper fight with Sniper Wolf. That is incredibly frustrating because you need to have that. Oh, I can't remember the name of the pill. They keep it throughout the series. It's the one that's that starts with a C.
I thought it was like Benzedrine or Benz.
Maybe it is that one. There's anyway.
That could be wrong.
You need to have that, otherwise that sniper rifle just starts shaking like crazy on you. So it's like back and forth. You just wound her enough that she runs away, and then you make your way, make your way to where she was. This then, after the sniper will fight, you make your way up this tower, try to get to
which, I feel like is almost the equivalent of, well, it's not the equivalent because there's nothing that happens in Metal Gear Solid 3, but it is this tower. This vertical tower is the length of that ladder in Metal Gear Solid 3, I think, at
right.
least. Because you are...
You
traveled up it for so, so long.
Uh-huh.
Just watching you do it, I was like, man.
And that wasn't even the one that had all the cameras and automatic weapons. That was in the other building.
That's true.
That sucked.
I was thinking of the one with all the soldiers and stuff.
Was that one? That was that one. You had to keep going up and there would be a few soldiers and you could either kill them or just keep running. Yeah, because you have to run up.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. I'm thinking of that. Yep.
I just want to point out real quick, this whole, like, will Meryl die or won't she die? Turns out it does not matter later on because they retcon it in 4, yet again, where she always lives. We actually did finish it and she did live. So we did see her again at the end, but there are playthroughs you can get where she dies.
Interesting.
They don't pick up on that story at all.
Yeah.
Before it's just like, she always lived. Don't even think about any other scenario otherwise.
Right. Don't worry about it.
Don't you even worry your little minds about it. Kojima's got a vision.
Yeah.
Either way,
even if she did die, I feel like you could very easily in this world just be like, well, they were alive the whole time. I sewed his arm back on, and now he's a different person.
That's true.
Person's alive again.
That's true. Yeah. Death means nothing in Metal
Gear. It really doesn't.
You're always going to come back in some way. Well, his toe got grafted on, and then all of a sudden he became, Vulcan Raven.
Yep.
Or I guess he was Vulcan Raven. He became Vulcan Ocelot Snake.
Yep.
That would be amazing.
Actually. That would be pretty insane. Yeah. Anyway.
We digress. Yes. But point, you get to the top of the tower. I only want to bring up this fight because of another game. So you get to the top and you face off against Liquid, who's in a helicopter. So it's like the Hind D is what this fight technically is. So it's like you facing off with your missile launcher against Liquid, who's just trying to gun you down. This one of my favorite indie games that came out early on the Switch. It was only one of my favorite ones because it is just a Metal Gear Solid parody.
Yeah.
It knows exactly what it's doing. It's going for the Metal Gear Solid aesthetic, albeit with some way simplified mechanics. It's called Never Stop Sneaking.
An apt name.
I need to show this to you now. Now that you and I have played this, you need to watch this. But the beginning of the game is almost like identical to like a Metal Gear game. You know, it's so ridiculous. But one of the enemies in the game is called Vice President Helicopter.
Nice.
And it's just a helicopter. So this fight is parried in that game where you get to these big sections where you have to like send these missiles off. But it's just like, the health bar always reads Vice President Helicopter and it gets me every time. It shows up like 6 times in that game and it's always funny to me.
VP Heli.
Yeah. Never Stop Sneaking. Very good.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Sounds amazing.
So after you get through the helicopter fight initially, that then sends you down another tower, but that tower is the one that has all the like cameras and crap. So like, I remember that. Remember that first time I ran into that one room that has like, there's like each corner of the wall has 3 or 4 mounted guns.
Yep.
And it has like 6 cameras around. And I just remember I kept throwing chaff grenades because I'm like, all right, it's gonna keep happening, so I need to keep throwing chaff grenades. And I remember I threw a chaff grenade and I ran in there. I'm like, oh fuck you, Kojima, because you were gonna try and get me on this one. So after you get through there, you will run into Sniper Wolf again, and this is like the last Sniper Wolf fight. That was the one where you had to go through kind of like caves. It was like some of it was caves, some of it was the rock crops, like these like trails where the wolves were.
The actual fight is like an outside patch, snowy patch with.
I just meant to get to that.
Oh,
part.
Yeah. Yep.
I forgot that we haven't even talked about Otacon yet, but we'll talk about Otacon when we get to the end of this fight.
Sounds good.
You have to get. So the wolves.
That was all before the first, like the hallway with her.
Oh, the wolves were the first part. Yeah. I thought the wolves were to the second part.
Nope.
So I can't remember, and I played it.
It's okay. I'm here for you.
Anyway, the important thing to know about is at some point,
because Otacon gives you her.
Yeah, it was after the first time you meet Otacon.
Yep.
Yeah. So you get a handkerchief from Otacon that smells like Sniper Wolf, and apparently, at some point, he says like, "How can she be a bad person? Anyone who loves animals can't be a bad person." And that's when you realize that as long as you have his handkerchief on you, the wolves will leave you alone.
Yeah.
Which is very important, because otherwise they will get you.
They will tear you to shreds.
Yeah. First couple of times they got me real good, and then I was like, oh, wait, put the handkerchief on. And the best part is they have the little cartoon hearts that pop up over their head.
Yeah. You can tell there's love.
Mm-hmm. I guess we should probably mention Otacon here then, because it factors into the second Cyberwolf scene. You run into Otacon because at this point he's still employed by the government making Metal Gear. Like, he was one of the scientists that created Metal Gear. And when he runs into Snake, like, he is regretful of building this nuke thing and wants to help Snake out.
Right.
So we need to touch on the fact that they reveal what Otacon stands for, and to this day it still bothers the shit out of me. Because I jumped into this game at 2 and I didn't know what Otacon meant. And I just thought, oh, it's, you know, Octagon or something. Yeah, just like one of these things, oh, it's a silly code name. It doesn't really mean anything.
Right.
I was wrong. In this game he reveals that his nickname is Otacon because it's a portmanteau of otaku convention, because he is such a manga and anime nerd. And, like, he's, I think he's, like, big into the and what's the robot one? Not Gunpla.
I couldn't tell you. Gundam?
Gundams, yes. Yeah. He's, like, big into Gundams.
Man, I don't know how
you pulled that one, man. Yeah, he's, like, super into that. And so he's just like, oh, yeah, I'm an otaku. I'm a nerd. So, you know, I go to these conventions a lot. It's an otaku convention. That's why I'm called Otacon. And I'm like, what? Why couldn't you have just let it be a thing? Why does everything have to have a backstory? Sometimes things are just better when they don't have a meaning.
Yeah, just give him a code name and be done with
it. Oh, so mad. I'm obviously still worked up about it to this day. In that playthrough, you'll literally, like, every other episode, be like, a freaking otaku convention, you gotta be kidding me. Like, they couldn't just let the nerd just have a cool name for no reason.
Right.
Like, they had to give it some dumb background.
Well, even that, can you imagine, like, your nickname is based off of somewhere you frequent?
Yeah.
Like, if your name was, like, if you're...
All right, waiting for this one.
If your nickname was Chippy because you went to Chipotle all the time or something, I don't know.
I was a little worried with the buildup. It wasn't going to go anywhere, but that was good.
Thank you.
Yep. Like, my nickname would be Upstairs Bedroom, because that's where I'm at most of my day now, working from home.
You'd be a bedro.
A bedro is pretty good.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like it.
Like, I'm the ideas guy. You keep me around. I'm the ideas guy.
I'm your meat and potatoes story and gameplay, man. You're the big ideas.
Color commentator.
Yeah. That's right. I get the play-by-play in.
Yeah. Back to you, Ken.
It's Otacon. He sneaks around with that same invisibility cloak thing that Gray Fox has, which is kind of fun. So he just pops up here and there. I enjoyed that quite a lot.
Yeah, I agree.
It was just like, hey, it's me again.
Yep.
Hey, watch out. It's kind of crazy, though, like, to see his origins in this game and then to think, like, he will be the guy who's tied to Snake throughout the rest of these games.
Yeah.
And I always thought there was more to it than that, other than, oh, he's just a guy you kind of run into.
Like a chance encounter. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
So, in one way, I guess that's kind of neat, but I built up the thing about starting at 2 and then playing this now 20 some years later is that I had built this mythos up in my head about what 1 was.
Yeah.
And boy, did it not hit any of that at all.
Yeah.
So right. This was very jarring for me, because I heard, like, oh, Shadow Moses, and oh, this is the Liquid Snake, and it seemed way more epic than it was.
Well, I definitely felt that way too, like, playing some of these, like, even, you know, jumping to, well, 2 to 3, obviously, like, in terms of release are next to each other, but, you know, you go backwards, but, you know, hearing, like, Big Boss and The Boss and, like, all those kinds of things, you're like, man, this is definitely going to be some epic stuff. And yeah, like, yeah. Shadow Moses and all of that, like, cool names. Mm-hmm. And then it's just like, well, it's yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of a straightforward, well, not straightforward, but it's just not a whole lot. I don't know. The lore itself is not so intense.
They put so much effort into building a universe out of this than you would ever expect, given what the story of this game is and what the game itself is.
Right, I agree.
Like, the fact that they were able to get 5 or 6 other games out of this is kind of mind-blowing based off what is presented here. Like, yeah, it's like, oh, kind of B-movie crazy.
Right.
But everything is super nonchalant and, like, very quickly introduced and then not brought up until later. Just, like...
And for how... For how dialogue heavy and like gotta give you all the details heavy it is, uh-huh. It's not really, they don't really do a great job of storytelling.
No. No, this is their first attempt at trying to make a movie.
Right.
And it's rough.
Yep.
It's really rough. And they would smooth all of those edges out in a Death Stranding game. So Sniper Wolf, and this, the second Sniper Wolf fight, it's another, that's the open field.
Yeah.
Sniper battle. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's more of the same as before. You need that.
There's a couple trees. Maybe that's what it's called.
Right. There's trees that she'll hide behind and you have to scope her out between there. This was the fight that I remember I'd have to run to the edges back and forth because they would restock you on ammo. And the pills to make you not eat your non-shaky pills.
Yeah, the non-shaky pills. That's what we'll call them.
Yep. So that one wasn't terrible. That got through, especially because I figured out there was like a weird point where she wouldn't shoot you. And so you could kind of hang back behind that point in the land. And then you could just take her out from there. And then maybe you'd have to move once in a while.
Yep.
But she would rarely try to get you from there. So... that whenever she dies, that's the whole story dump, and that's when Ocelot's just like, I'm in love with you, and you're like, how?
Yeah.
Where was this the whole time, other than the one time you said, oh, I was, like, sneaking around, and I saw she was nice to wolves.
Yep.
So...
Such a strange...
I still don't get why they decided to make it seem like he fell for her.
And because, Chris, love is a battlefield.
Sorry, I completely forgot to ask you, do you think love can bloom in a battlefield?
I think anything can happen.
Forgot about that.
And love, that love can bloom. Yeah, the love can bloom in a battlefield. It's not love is a battlefield. That's
one of the first conversations Snake and Otacon have together.
Can love bloom in a battlefield?
Hey, by the way, there's a robotic snake. A robotic lizard running around that has a bunch of nukes on it. But before we get to any of that, do you think people will love me?
Yeah, exactly.
Just do you think the nice wolf lady might think I'm pretty?
Yep. Just so ridiculous.
Snake has his ridiculous dialogue back of, you know, maybe when the wind blows through the trees and then only truly can humanity love one another if we all put down our arms. And you're like, dude, you guys got to stop waxing poetic.
Yeah, what the hell?
That nuke is about to fire.
You'll have time to get into philosophical debates
and
give each other bad dating advice.
The thing that I think was an important addition to the series going forward was story editors.
Yes.
And also someone... A full localization team.
Yep.
Not just one dude.
Yep.
So, yeah. One dude localized this whole game for America.
Tough.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah. And it shows. So, Sniper Wolf, you know, Sniper Wolf fight ends the whole dialogue thing, and Nauticon loves her, and she just wants to die.
Yep.
just end it, Snake. And then he does.
She's had a rough life.
She really does. Like, her backstory is...
It is
a tragic character. It's sad that they can't make these well-rounded characters out from the beginning instead of waiting until literally they're about to die
before they make them
interesting and more than just one-note character.
Right before you're about to forget about them entirely.
Yeah. That's the Kojima storytelling, at least in Metal Gear 1. After this fight, You will make your way down into the basement closer to Metal Gear Rex, but first you have to fight in a big old freezer with Vulcan Raven.
Vulcan Raven.
And this is the one where he has like that big old like rattling gun. What's the big gun?
Like
the spinny gun.
Yeah, like a Gatling gun.
Gatling gun, yeah. Not a rattling gun.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm a weapons expert. This is what we call it.
Yeah, weapons questions. Weapons
business.
You've come to the right place.
There's a Gatling gun.
Two of us.
That's right. No war.
It's just all the shooties.
All the shooties and the splodies.
All the shoots and the splodes. That's my nickname is Shoot Splod.
That's our upcoming Patreon only podcast. Yeah, shooties and splodies.
Shooties and splodies. Coming to you live. Where do you do this? I don't know.
It's where we're just going to discuss Michael Bay movies. Anyway, you fight in the freezer. This is the one where you have to use the Nikita missiles again, and you have to... This is how I learned how the Nikita missiles actually work. That's when I learned that you have to hold down the fire button to charge them up so they go faster. They do that thing where they go fast and they stop and they go fast and they stop unless you hold it and then they just go fast.
Yeah, this was an interesting battle to watch you play because I had no clue, and especially doing it virtually,
mm-hmm.
I had no clue how you were actually playing it. Like if I could have seen, you know, at least your hands moving on the controller, I'd be like, okay, I think I understand the, you know, shittiness.
Yeah.
In general, but this, it was funny, like, watching. I was like, why is it speeding up and slowing down? Like, what is actually going on here? It really didn't make any sense, but.
Yeah, I know it had to be frustrating to watch. It was very frustrating to play.
I'm sure.
Because I did not know how the missile system worked until way later and we looked it up.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, this makes more sense now. But still, that was frustrating because at certain points he would destroy containers and then block off. It's like a grid.
Yep.
You could try to put claymores down, and I did that at points, and I had better success because he would always run around these weird. He didn't have consistent patterns, but he would always make like around corners and stuff. So you could put claymores down, and that would get him and knock his damage down. But this probably took 5 or 6 tries.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
It took maybe longer than that, but I remember this one was one of the first times I was, well, not one of the first times, but this was one of the fights that was like, oh god, am I gonna finish this?
Yeah.
I am real mad.
It was a tough one.
Yeah, getting through that one, we got to where actually Metal Gear Rex was. At this point you have a security key. And the president had told you before that there are 3 keys.
Yes.
And you're like, well, why is there a key if there's also a password? Because I remember you're like, oh, there's a password to unlock it and only these people know it. But he's like, don't worry. You don't even need that password because you got these 3 keys. And you're like, well, great. And they're like,
why don't I just have the password?
Dude, yeah, it's like, easier. Well, why wouldn't you just have the password? Why would you have 2 different keys to get you into the same thing if one is easier than the other?
This is how MFA became a thing.
Right, this is early MFA and it was bad. And so then you find out that the 3 keys aren't in different places. It's that you have the same key that you have now can morph depending on temperature. So you have your room temperature key, which you just go ahead and use right away, and then you have to go get 2 other keys, and by doing that you have to heat up the key and then cool down the key. So you have your multi, I'm going to call it the multi hot key, and then the freezy, freezy cold key. So that means you have to go. There's like a steel factory.
Yeah,
or something.
For some reason, it's the, you know, final scene in the Terminator 2.
It's like this basement level
facility, yeah.
But it's just like molten hot steel or whatever. Like, yep. Well, I don't know what it is, but it's just being. Maybe that's what they use to build the stuff for Rex or whatever.
Yeah.
But like that's there, and I know because I fell into that molten pit 3 times because they want you to like crawl out. So like you just want to hover above the heat to heat your key up. But then, like, because of the good old DualShock 2 sticks, sometimes I wouldn't be pinned up against the way I thought it would be, and just fall right in.
Yep.
And that was another.
It was just as aggravating to watch as I'm sure as it was as I'm sure it was to.
That's like part 6 or 7 in the playlist, and you can see me die on the inside. So after that one, then you have to go back, put the key in, and you have to backtrack yet again to where you were in the freezer for the Vulcan fight. And I think his body isn't there anymore.
Correct.
Maybe, yeah. Anyway, you go in there.
I was trying to even remember if the Ravens were there.
They are still there because I remember when we came back up out of there, the Ravens are still flying around. That's right. So you stay in there for a bit, get the card cold. Make your way back to Rex. Unlock it. Yay! Ocelot and Snake are there. So you have to do it secretly around them. But anyway, that doesn't matter because then they're just like, hey, you, we know you're trying to steal Rex. And so then Liquid hops into Rex.
Yep.
And then, of course there's a big dialogue block. Does it really matter? No. Because you're going to fight off against Liquid inside of Metal Gear Rex.
Yep.
And this is the worst fight in this whole freaking game that I had to do. I had to constantly run around the borders. I had to make sure immediately out of the gate you have a little bit of time to run away and hide. Because he has like the big vision cone. And it's the same fight that you have with everybody else. You're just avoiding the vision cone. Except his moves so much faster than the rest and is much bigger area to cover. So I had to run to the end of the room, grab the chaff grenades, chuck one of those out, get behind him, shoot a missile off at him, and it's one of those auto-targeting ones, too. It's not the Nikita ones. It's the ones, I can't remember what that, that's the Stinger missile.
Yes, the Stinger.
So that one you have to get into first-person mode and shoot one off and make sure that it's auto-targeted long enough, and then it would hit. And do damage to him. And then you just repeat the process. And if you like paused for even a second, he would find you. And it would be a mix of either shooting one of the... It had like guns on it. It had lasers.
Yep.
Screw that laser. I hate that laser.
It was annoying, yeah.
And then sometimes it would just stomp if you were near it. And they would knock you over. All of these would knock you down. And then you had to quickly... If you were able to recover, you could get a grenade out and then get away. I think it took this took a lot of retries.
Yeah, I was going to say 8 or 10, probably.
Like, this was split over 2 different streams.
Yep.
I remember, because I think I did it like 4 or 5 times one stream, and then I had to do it like another 5 times the next stream.
Yep.
It is so frustrating to play. And it's like, I remember the one in 2, where you're facing off against like 20 Rexes.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I was like, why was that easier?
Yeah, it is. It's weird that one was that much easier. But again, I think it just boils down to the controls.
Yeah, I think they at least, like, something about 2 at least made it slightly easier to play. I think also Raiden has a better dodge move than Snake does.
Yep.
So it was easier to get out of the way of all those Rexes. But yeah, like, that's the parallel here. So you're fighting 1 Rex, and then 2, you're fighting 20 Rexes.
Yeah.
And then you're on Ray, which is a bigger version.
Yep.
This fight, I can't... This is really when I was like, I really don't know if I can recommend playing this game to anyone nowadays. Because all the games in the series...
Until a remake happens.
We'll see. Konami keeps dipping their toes back in the water of making a game other than the football game they make every year.
Yeah,
and one of these years, it's either that or give me more Silent Hill. One of the two. But anyway, yeah, it's. I would say at this point in 2021, you might as well just watch a story compilation on YouTube rather than play this game, because it. Really was, it wasn't a fun frustrating. It was, I don't know what this game wants me to do to get past it.
Yeah.
It was only through like trial and error and then reading game facts that I got through it.
Yeah, there were definitely a couple parts that just left you hanging. And not like in a good way, not in a structural way, in a way that's like, oh, here's hinting at something else to do.
Right.
It was more just,
it's like, what do you want? It's 1998. We're figuring out 3D games.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you should just be amazed that this happened at all.
Yeah.
We had to use two discs.
Dang.
So you do, once you eventually get through this fight, man, did I celebrate. got through this fight. Whole another big story dump where that's when you find out that you're clones of a big boss and that Liquid is jealous because Snake got all of Boss's dominant traits and Liquid got all the recessive traits. And so he's just jealous that Snake is this big soldier and he's relegated to nothing. And this leads to this big cinematic moment where you have a hand-to-hand fight with Liquid on top of Metal Gear Rex. And it's no weapons.
Also a pain in the ass.
This was a big pain in the ass, but it had to do more with the fact that you could only punch and kick.
Yeah.
And also you can get knocked off of Rex. This one wasn't as bad as the Rex fight, but didn't this one suck? Because I remember if you died, you had to do the Rex fight again.
No.
That wasn't it?
No.
Okay. There was one of those ones.
The Rex fight was a two-parter.
Right.
And if you died in the second part,
you had to redo the whole thing.
Yep. Because Grey Wolf came and told you about What's-Her-Face's parents and killing What's-Her-Face.
I do think, too, in the Rex fight, that's when Grey Fox shows up again.
Yeah, what I meant to say.
Yeah, yeah. At the end of after you damage it enough, it still looks like, oh, you can't hurt Rex, and then Grey Fox shows up. Yep. He dies because he gets pinned against the wall, but he does enough damage to Rex that then the movie, this is where the story time kicks in. And Snake is able to take out Rex because Grey Fox did enough. Because that was the whole point where they let you hold the weapon up. The missile up in first-person targeting mode.
Oh,
do it, Snake, do it. Kill us, kill me, and then kill Grey Fox. And you're, aiming, and every time you try to hit the weapon, he just goes, no, can't do it. I can't do it. And then one of the many times I got through that part and then died and had to do it again, I just kept hitting it as fast as I could. So it was just, no, can't do it, no. Because that one was for me.
Yep.
The game took so much away from me. I needed to take something from it.
Yep. the only redeeming part of that for me was getting the end of Frank's story about killing Merrill's, not Merrill's.
Right. He was the one that was tasked with killing Sniper Wolf's parents, right?
Not Sniper Wolf.
Were the Merrill's?
The other lady she was the medical, she was the one who did the neurotransmitters.
It's that Naomi.
Naomi, yeah, thank you.
Because Naomi and Grey Fox had this relationship where Grey Fox looked out for her.
Yeah, it was her brother. She thought of him as
a big brother. And then you find out the whole reason he felt that he owed that to her is because he was the one that had to kill her parents.
And she was incessantly trying to figure out who was the person who killed her parents.
Right.
And it turns out it was him the whole time. Yeah.
I think also in that story,
that was a good addition.
That was one of the ones that was good. That was a nice addition. I think this was in between the Rex and the final fight is the story bit about Fox Die. Because the beginning of the game, Naomi injects you with something. And you're like, oh, don't worry about it, it's fine. And that's when you find out that it's Fox Die. Which is supposed to, he's injected with it. I think Liquid's injected with it. And it was supposed to kill Liquid and Snake because they were clones of Big Boss. So they were trying to take out the Big Boss. The remaining big boss.
So they were, yeah.
So Naomi wanted
to, too powerful.
To kill the remnants of Big Boss. Did she blame Big Boss for her parents being killed?
Yeah, I think she did, yeah.
Yeah, so she was trying to take revenge on that.
Yeah.
However, she had a vaccine for Snake that she didn't know would work or not, but Snake got the vaccine where Liquid didn't.
Right.
Which sets up an important story beat for the rest of the series.
Did the DARPA chief also have, and the other guy who died? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think that's why they died in this one was Fox Die.
Fox Die as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
We can always check this against Metal Gear Timeline, but it's more fun to be vague and have people be
well,
mad
I mean, that's
while
basically that's how we're led through the games anyway. Vaguely.
Right. Yeah. We're presenting this as we try to remember it. It's insanely confusing.
I honestly can't believe like how many times I've read Metal Gear Timeline, like the games that I've played just to remember. And then very quickly, I'm like, wait, yeah. Does that really make sense? Yeah. Is that actually what happened?
I have a lot of times where I read that and go, did I do that?
Yeah, right.
I played this game 3 times and I don't remember doing that.
Yeah, I don't remember that part. Yeah. Anyway,
but continue. So the important thing going forward with the Fox Eye and Snake being somewhat vaccinated with the cure is that while it prevents him from dying immediately, it does speed up his aging.
Right.
So from here on out, he will age much faster than everyone else and die much younger, but he won't die immediately.
Right.
That's important. That gets revealed in the fight. Then you do the big fight because you're like, well, we're both going to die anyway. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, so let's do it now, brother. Also, no one can explain why Liquid has that weird accent.
Brother.
Yeah. Because Solidus doesn't have it, and Snake doesn't have it, but he's just like, brother, hello, it is me, Liquid.
Yeah.
I'm here to steal this robotic lizard.
Who was he raised
by? Yeah. It's like, where did he go? Where the other two
like a vaudevillian.
Yeah. I say didn't. Solidus was cloned way later.
Yeah.
So you have the big fight at the end, and it's a big action scene, and then depending on if you saved Meryl or not, you know, Meryl will help you escape. But that's also, I think it's after the hand-to-hand fight, you do that escape scene from the tunnel.
Yes.
And, like, Liquid's trying, is it Liquid or Ocelot that's trying to get you on the way out?
It is Liquid.
Right, it is Liquid. So, yeah, Liquid is like, you have this whole sequence in the tunnels where they're shooting at you and you have to shoot back. With the gun mounted on the Jeep, and then I took me 2 or 3 times.
That was rough.
And then you escape, and then you save the world and get the girl, kind of.
Yeah. No nukes.
You do find. Yep. You do find out that Meryl is actually the niece of Roy Campbell.
Yes.
She did not know that. He knew that, but never told her.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
That's important. She is not happy about that. And I'm trying to think of any other story beats. Otacon escapes too. He makes out earlier.
Yes.
He basically is like, I'm going to get out of here while you go save the world. Good luck, buddy. I'm going to help you later on when you have a really dumb name. That's an homage to Escape from New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, that, thank God that was the end of it, because at that point I was fried.
Right.
I was just like, I never, like, I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I played through it. I never want to play this game again.
Yeah.
It will sit on my shelf because I own all the Metal Gear games, including 4, even though I can't play 4.
Yeah.
Just a couple of other things I wanted to cover was the last couple, like, one, real quick, the one thing I forgot to mention was that torture sequence. So, like, before you have the second Vulcan Raven fight, and I think it's maybe it's before the Cypher Wolf second fight. At some point, you get captured and you're in a prison cell. And Ocelot and Raven, Ocelot is trying to get information out of you about your mission. And that's what determines whether Meryl dies or not. If you press select at any point to give up, you basically kill Meryl. That's what I found out.
Interesting.
It's one of those ones where it's like a button mashing minigame, so you get zapped a bunch by Vulcan and
by Ocelot.
Oh, by Ocelot. Sorry, yeah. Vulcan's around, but he's not doing anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you get zapped a lot, and you have to tap the button a lot. And boy, with someone that has RSI, that was killer. Especially some of those days where I was in the middle of a pretty bad like project at work, and so I was doing a lot of typing.
Yeah.
My arms would be sore, and then it's like, oh, guess what? You get to tap this button repetitively many, yeah, many times.
That doesn't help.
Yeah, I hope your arms aren't too fucked.
Sorry.
Yep. So that took a couple of times too, because when we reloaded it, we realized that the way out was Otacon sneaks in and he hands you ketchup.
Yep.
Because he was like, well, I can't get you food, but here's some ketchup packets. And so you wait for one of the guards to
sustenance is at its finest.
Of course. Yeah, only the finest. So one of the guards has to go to the bathroom. He comes back, and what you're supposed to do is you have to equip the ketchup and then lie down on the ground and don't move. So when you lie down on the ground and don't move with the ketchup assigned, it starts like trickling out and he thinks you're bleeding. I did learn that you have to time it right, because if he catches you laying down, he's just like, I know that's ketchup.
Yep. Get and then up. You're just stuck.
And then you have to just get zapped.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, if you do it right, he comes in and then you can knock him out and then escape and then eventually take on the other guys. That torture sequence was awful. It is still the worst. Other than the Rex fight, the two things I remember about this game is the torture sequence, because it killed my arms to do. It was just so really frustrating. And there was no obvious, we had to search for how to do that ketchup thing right. They don't tell you. They give you vague hints about, like, I don't know, you just check your inventory. It's like, oh, great. And then the Rex fight was just...
Well, yeah, I mean, it was even just, like, the way to do the ketchup thing. Because I think we had the vague idea, like, oh, what about this ketchup?
Mm-hmm.
But then I think just, like, the way you had to do it or something was, like, very, very strange.
I remember I did it accidentally, too, at one point. Because I remember I lied down and just had the ketchup, and then it started to trickle out. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Maybe there's something there. And then it didn't work the first time. And then that's when I found out you have to do it pretty quickly when he leaves. So yeah, that was really frustrating, those two fights. This game plays horribly, but that's just because times have changed. Like, in 1998, this was probably revolutionary.
Right.
And I don't, you know. But now that things have standardized in a way of, like, R2 is the aim, and or left trigger is aim, R2 is fire, and, you know, like, we have all these, like, shared mappings of buttons. It's just so tough.
It is.
It's tough to go back to this one. Even as someone who played a lot of the original games, like, I know what 2 and 3 are, and those control weird, but this is so much worse.
Yeah.
So much worse. A couple of the weird, like, fourth wall breaking moments, because, you know, this game is ripe with them.
It's always fun.
There was a frequency we mentioned earlier. There was a Psycho Mantis memory card data. There's Psycho Mantis controller moving. And then also Colonel Campbell keeps telling you to use the action button when he's telling you how to fight.
Oh, yeah. Press the action.
Use the action button. Like, they don't care. They know you're playing a video game.
Yep.
I have a note specifically about ghosts in the game, because we never did this, because this required getting through the game once. Mm. And so I just want to read this verbatim. I think this came from either GameFAQs or an IGN. Like, this is just about the game. This actually might have came from the Wikipedia about the game.
Nice.
So, once a playthrough of Metal Gear Solid is complete, the player is given a digital camera. They can use the camera on their next playthrough to take pictures. It is possible to also see ghosts of the Metal Gear Solid development team, which are scattered throughout the game. Most memorably, they can snap a picture of Hideo Kojima's ghost rising from the steam of the guard's urine in the men's bathroom of the second base after the M1 Abrams tank battle.
What the hell?
So I guess I could give Kojima flack for a lot of things, and rightfully should have some flack for some of his choices, but he appears in the steam of a man's piss. He does not take himself too seriously.
Apparently not, yeah.
Oh. As much as you can find fault with him, I guess you can't fault him for not having a sense of humor. He clearly does.
Yep.
I'm happy to say, in summary, I'm glad I played it. I will never play it again. And I just recommend, if you're interested at all in how the series starts, go to Metal Gear Timeline or just watch this on Twitch or something. It's not worth your time. You will be frustrated.
Yeah.
Paul, I know you didn't get to play it, but any final thoughts on watching Metal Gear Solid?
I mean, I'll second what you said. I mean, I won't play it, but yeah, even just watching it at times was just frustrating. but yeah, I mean, it's a Metal Gear game. I mean, you can definitely see where, you know, tropes in later, you know, later games or later, you know, 2, 3 and onward, whatever, mm-hmm. Come from. I was even thinking, like, during the torture scene, like, that's something they do in Peace Walker, even. Like, there's a torture scene that's basically the same thing, and then you're breaking out of a jail cell and you do all of that, like, mm-hmm. that happens too. So, you know, it's a just, this is sort of the, this was the template for some of those tropes, and, you know, especially between 1 and 2 kind of being a very similar game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all of that. So it was cool to, like, finally see those things happen after, I know when I was playing 2, you know, I read the synopsis for 1 just to mm-hmm. kind of understand some of the characters or what was happening. But it was cool to see that. But it was also, like we said before, it was sort of built up as this epic thing. And at the end of the day, it kind of isn't.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I really do think, like, you have to start at 1 to, I think, maybe not build up the backstory in a way. Because when the way they talk about it in 2 and the other games, with the way it gets referenced, you really build up this grander idea of how things play out than they really do in this game.
Yeah.
And so I do regret, that's maybe my biggest regret, having played it for the first time this, you know, 20 years or even longer after its initial release, was just, it feels like I didn't get the experience the way it was meant to be had. But, you know, like I said, I'm glad to have seen it and know where it came from. And it's honestly more impressive to me that they were able to make those later games as good as they were from this.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the story is still bonkers. You know, it's still definitely just wild to see where everything goes. It just, there's nothing compared to what they would do later on in terms of actual storytelling, in terms of story pacing.
Character, and that's saying a lot. Like that. Yeah, a lot, it's true. It's true. It really is. Yep.
Yeah, like, the pacing is not something you think of when you think of Metal Gear. You know, editing is not something you think of when you think of Metal Gear.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to be down on it, but of the games in the series, I think this is probably the worst one for me. The ones we played so far. And that's only because everything they do in this game, they're going to do it bigger and better.
Yes.
Later on.
With that in mind, with what 2 became.
Yep.
I mean, to me, the control schemes are annoying as hell. Great. And I don't know that I would play 2 again, even, just because of that. Because I know that I would have to fight the control scheme the whole time again. If it was a modern, like, if they redid it or something, hell yeah, I'd probably play it again.
Yeah.
But just because it was bizarre. I mean, just such a bizarre game. Yeah. But the, yeah, that's, and that, maybe the same for 1, too. Like, maybe that's just part of it, is if they were to, you know, remake it.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I'd be curious to play Twin Snakes to see if Twin Snakes, like, A, how much of the story do they change, and B, does it feel better than this?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. This will be my last thought on it, and then we'll wrap it all up. But I, as someone who has played Metal Gear Solid 2 3 times, I would much rather, I would still play Metal Gear Solid 2 again. Someone who's now played Metal Gear Solid 1 once, I would not be playing this again.
Yeah. As somebody who has watched you play Metal Gear Solid 1 once, I will do the same. But I would agree with you on 2.
Yeah.
And even though I just said I wouldn't play it again, but If I had to choose between the two, I guess is what I'm saying. I would definitely play two.
Yep. So that's it. That is Metal Gear Solid finally in the books.
Yep.
And so we've now gotten through the first three of the series.
That's true.
That's pretty cool. I think from here, we could go one of two ways with, like, obviously we kind of want to touch all of Metal Gear at some point. I think we might, I'd like to do five next because five picks up after three.
Yeah, that's, I would like to as well.
And five is easier for us to play because we can each, I think we each either have a copy or have access to it with Game Pass right now.
And yeah, I definitely have a copy of it.
Five is the least story heavy, but the best playing one by far.
Yep.
Oh, I adore five in a lot of ways. It's up there for me. So, and then four is going to be another one where we have to play together.
Yeah.
Via PlayStation Now. But I have started four. Four is something else.
Yeah, I am interested to see how that goes.
Yeah.
As a culmination of the series.
Just an early, I won't give like story stuff away. There is, you know, I'm going to have to probably start it over again at some point. But I will say this. Four feels like such an anomaly in the series now. With the way that five turned out. Four feels unlike any of the other games.
Interesting.
And I don't know if it's just because of the way that they told the story and like the visual changes they made, or just because of like the controls just sort of feel like one and done kind of thing.
Gotcha.
But four just feels like it exists completely on its own. Like, it feels like none of the other Metal Gear games influenced the gameplay of it, but the story is obviously incredibly influenced by everything that happened here and in 2.
Yep.
That's just the teaser for our later eventual complete run of the
happens.
Metal Gear games. But if you like the episode, make sure that you leave reviews on whatever podcast platform you're on. We're on Google Podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts. We are on Spotify. We are on Pocket Casts. We're on Overcast. There's a couple other ones I've never heard of. Breaker. Check us out on there.
We've broke.
That's right. Help us break bigger.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah. Rate us on there. That helps us out. Tell your friends if you like it. We appreciate all the listens. You can find in the show notes the playthrough of Metal Gear Solid. There's also a link to the book that I mentioned. So, check that out in the show notes. Next month, we do know what we're going to talk about, and we will reveal it here right now. It is a game that I can assure you, before the pandemic happened, never would have thought we'd ever play this.
No, not at all.
Or even be able to talk about it in a way that didn't make us sound like grumpy old gamer uncles.
And don't worry, we probably will.
Oh yeah, it's good. This one is definitely going to make us sound old, for sure. We are going to talk about Minecraft. And we have to talk about it. We have played it. We played a lot of it.
We did.
And quite surprised by it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's next month. And then what comes after that is that, I don't want to give too many things away, but it might have something to do with a certain T-virus.
We might be traversing a mansion.
There might be some residents that are quite evil.
With that puzzle.
Yep. With that stumper put out there. Mull over that over the next month and see if you can figure out what we're going to be doing soon. But thank you all for listening. Paul, thank you for being here in person.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be in the same room again.
Of course. It's so, so much nicer.
Yes.
Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you all soon.
Bye.